Welcome to the Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Glad to be here for this one.
Yeah, so if you break an arm, right, mm-hmm. an x-ray gives you this really clean, like binary answer.
Right, it's just broken or it's...
Exactly. You see that jagged white line, the doctor just points at it and says, there it is. But human identity.
Oh, that's completely different.
Yeah, it's a murky landscape. I mean, our past mistakes, our deep regrets, our sense of purpose... None of that shows up on an x-ray.
Unfortunately.
Right. But today, we are actually looking at a concept that kind of acts as an x-ray for that exact landscape. It cuts through all the mud and gives us a solid place to stand.
Which is something I think everyone is looking for.
For sure. Now, before we get into navigating those waters, just a quick housekeeping note for you listening. If you want to hear the full messages we're discussing today, these sermons are available on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
Lots of ways to find them.
Yeah, you can just go to the website, faithwayfbc.com, for more information. So our mission today for this deep dive is to explore the concept of grace.
And we're drawing from two specific teachings by Pastor Tim Travis.
Exactly. And we aren't treating this as some, you know, lofty or abstract theological idea. We want to look at it as a practical anchor for our identity and really as a resource that we're meant to manage.
Which requires setting a very specific baseline before we get too far in.
Right. How are we defining it?
Well, Pastor Tim Travis defines grace simply as the unmerited favor of God.
Unmerited favor.
Yeah. It is receiving something of infinite value that you did not work for and honestly you could never earn.
Which sounds simple on the surface, right?
It does, but if you actually internalize that, I mean, if you truly understand that your standing isn't based on your performance, it completely detonates how you view your past and your present.
I want to look at how that detonation actually happens, especially starting with this idea of identity. Because the message anchors this in 1 Corinthians 15, specifically the Apostle Paul's famous declaration.
Right, where he says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am.
Right. Now, normally when I hear someone say, I am what I am, it sounds like Popeye.
Yeah, like total resignation.
Exactly. Like yeah. Someone sitting in a dead-end job or maybe a broken relationship, just sighing and saying, oh, well, I guess this is just who I am. I'm stuck here. It is what it is.
It does usually carry that tone of defeat in modern culture, but the teaching emphasizes that for Paul, this is the exact opposite of resignation.
It's not him giving up.
Not at all. It is a statement of profound revelation and immense joy, really. But to understand why, you have to look at the sheer weight of Paul's backstory.
Because he wasn't always Paul.
Right. Before he was the Apostle Paul, he was Saul of Tarsus. He was a Pharisee. And he was the protege of Gamaliel, who was essentially the greatest theologian of his day.
So we're talking about the absolute Ivy League elite of the ancient world.
Exactly. Paul was literally next in line for ultimate religious and political power. I mean, he says that concerning the righteousness, which is in the law, he was blameless.
Wow.
He had the pedigree, he had the prominence, the wealth, and he was rising rapidly.
But, and this is the crazy part, he was using all of that prominence to violently persecute the early church.
Yes, hauling men and women off to prison.
Endorsing their executions. I mean, he had all the power in the world, but he was completely, terrifyingly blind to what he was actually doing.
And Pastor Tim Travis uses a brilliant analogy here to capture that exact psychological state.
The blindfold one, right?
Yeah. If you take a human being, blindfold them, and tell them to walk in a perfectly straight line across a big field, they cannot do it.
Right. It's scientifically proven.
Exactly. Without a visual anchor, human beings just naturally drift to the left or the right. We end up walking in circles.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. And spiritually speaking, humanity is doing the exact same thing. And Paul was the ultimate example of it.
He thought he was walking straight.
Right. He thought his power and his religion were keeping him on a perfectly straight path toward righteousness. But he was blindfolded by his own pride. Grace is the moment that blindfold actually comes off.
Man, imagine the psychological shock of that moment, though.
Oh, it would be staggering.
It makes me think of someone spending their entire life desperately climbing this corporate ladder, you know, putting in 80-hour weeks.
Missing your kids' birthdays.
Yeah, sacrificing your health, your soul, everything just to reach that top rung. And then you finally get there, you pull off the blindfold, look around, and realize your ladder was leaning against the completely wrong building.
What a terrible feeling.
Right. All that intense effort was just taking you further in the wrong direction.
Hey.
So how does someone like Paul process losing an entire lifetime of worldly status once he realizes it was all just a mirage?
Well, he does some pretty extreme accounting.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
In Philippians chapter 3, Paul essentially audits the ledger of his life. In financial terms, you have your gain column, which is in the black, and your loss column, which is in the red.
Basic accounting.
Right. And for his entire life, Paul had been stuffing that gain column with his wealth, his elite education, his political power, and all his strict religious rule-keeping.
He was super wealthy on paper.
Exactly. But when Grace takes the blindfold off, Paul realizes that everything in that gain column was actually a total loss.
Wow.
It was the very stuff that was blinding him. And what he previously thought was a loss, like surrendering his pride, losing his worldly status, submitting to a Christ, that was actually his ultimate gain. The entire ledger just flips upside down.
But Paul's ledger flip exposes a really dangerous illusion that we all still fall for today, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if we're honest, everyone listening to this has probably daydreamed about winning the lottery, right? Or getting that massive promotion.
Or finally having enough power to never have to answer to anyone ever again.
Exactly. We see prominence as the ultimate goal. Yet the sermon explores how that exact prominence, if it doesn't have a deeper purpose, is profoundly empty.
Yeah, Pastor Tim Travis points out that a person can be, as he says, prominent but pathetic.
That's a strong phrase.
Or they can be progressing but in the wrong direction. And there is a biblical example he uses to illustrate this trap, the rich young ruler.
Right, the guy who comes to Jesus.
Yeah, he wants eternal life. But when Jesus tells him to sell his possessions and follow him, the man walks away sorrowful. And notice the title he is given there, rich, young, and a ruler.
That is literally the holy trinity of modern culture.
It really is.
I mean, wealth, youth, and power. People spend millions of dollars on plastic surgery and, you know, stock portfolios and networking just to get those three exact things.
Yeah, that guy basically had the ultimate winning lottery ticket.
And yet, having all three, he walked away from the source of life completely sorrowful.
Because his identity was so entirely wrapped up in his stuff and his status that he just couldn't let it go. And we see the inverse danger of this with King Rehoboam, Solomon's son.
Remind me about him.
Well, Rehoboam was handed everything. He inherited unimaginable wealth and absolute power, but he never had to struggle for any of it.
So he never built any real character.
Exactly. So when he became king and actually had to make crucial decisions for the nation, he ignored the wisdom of the elders. He took the foolish, ego-driven advice of his high school cronies.
Yikes.
And as Pastor Tim Travis phrases it, he folded like a card table and nearly destroyed the entire kingdom.
Which honestly makes perfect sense when you look at the mechanics of power.
How do you mean?
Like if you inherit a massive amount of weight, whether that's money or influence, but you haven't built the internal muscular structure of character to hold it up, you are going to collapse.
Yeah, the weight just crushes you.
Exactly. You make decisions based on protecting your ego rather than exercising wisdom. And Pastor Tim Travis doesn't just leave this in the ancient world, right? He brings it right into the modern day.
He does, by contrasting two very different approaches to having it all.
Right. On one hand, you have Chuck Feeney.
The billionaire.
Yeah, who secretly gave away his massive fortune during his lifetime. I mean, he lived in a rented apartment, he didn't even own a car, and he just quietly distributed his billions.
Because he realized early on that the money itself was just an illusion. It didn't actually matter.
Right. But then on the tragic end of the spectrum, the message discusses Robin Williams.
Yeah, and Pastor Tim Travis frames this with such deep empathy.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is. Here was a man who possessed unimaginable fame, incredible wealth, and the adoration of millions across the globe, yet he tragically ended his own life.
Which is just so profoundly sad.
It is. And the sermon notes how often we see this specific narrative play out. People reach the absolute pinnacle of worldly success. They attain everything the culture insists will make them happy.
But without a spiritual anchor, they find themselves staring into a void of deep emptiness.
Right, seeing no hope at all.
It is a sobering reality to impartially look at how often worldly success just utterly fails to deliver on its core promises.
And the sermon even connects this cultural drift to the growing demographic known as the knowns.
The 30% of adults who identify with no religious affiliation whatsoever.
Exactly. The suggestion there is that this group is really a symptom of a culture wandering without a compass, desperate for identity, but searching in all the wrong places.
Yeah. But I actually want to pause here and maybe push back on this a little bit on behalf of the listener.
Okay, sure.
Because it is incredibly easy for a billionaire like Chuck Feeney to say, you know, money doesn't matter after he's already made billions.
That's a fair point.
But for the average person listening right now, who might be working two jobs, stressing over the electric bill, and feeling completely stuck in a life of obscurity.
How does a concept like grace actually help them?
Right. It's hard to hear about the dangers of prominence when you feel like you've been entirely forgotten by the world.
That is the most vital question we can ask. How does this apply in the trenches of everyday life?
Exactly.
Well, Pastor Tim Travis introduces a fascinating concept to address exactly that feeling of obscurity. He calls it God's GPS.
God's positioning system. I love that.
It's great, right? If we look at the historical record, God consistently does his most vital work with the obscure.
Give me an example.
Take Moses. At 80 years old, he was living on the backside of the desert, tending sheep.
He was a fugitive.
Exactly, a fugitive who had lost his royal Egyptian status decades ago. He likely thought his life was totally over and that he was completely forgotten.
Okay, but let's be real about Moses for a second. He was in that desert for 40 years.
A long time.
Yeah, to him, that didn't feel like a master plan. That felt like an absolute waste of a life.
So how does knowing about God's GPS actually help someone who feels like their current obscurity is just a punishment or maybe a failure?
Because the obscurity isn't a punishment, it's a prerequisite.
A prerequisite?
Yeah. God met Moses in that exact desert at 80 years old to launch the liberation of Israel. The location was the point.
Oh, okay.
Or look back at Paul. After his massive conversion, God didn't send Paul to a prestigious university in Jerusalem to launch a global ministry.
Where did she go?
God sent him into the Arabian desert.
Seriously?
Yeah. Pastor Tim Travis jokingly calls it Arabia Baptist Bible College. Paul had to go into the deep obscurity of the desert to systematically unlearn all of his elite worldly education.
Oh, that makes sense.
He had to be stripped of his reliance on his pedigree before he could actually be used to reach the Gentiles. The obscurity was the training ground.
So the feeling of being stuck or forgotten is actually a complete misinterpretation of being intentionally positioned. Precisely that. Which shifts us directly into the teaching from 1 Peter chapter 4, where believers are called to be good stewards of the manifold grace of God.
Okay, break that down for me.
To understand this, we have to define what a steward actually is.
Right.
A steward is not an owner. A steward is someone entrusted to manage property, finances, or affairs that belong to a master.
Because if the property belonged to you, you can just burn it down or sell it.
Exactly. But because it belongs to someone else, you manage it according to their will.
Let's make this really tangible for the listener.
Sure.
Imagine you are house-sitting this spectacular multi-million-dollar mansion.
Nice gig.
Right. But you do not own the deed to the house. You didn't pay for the plumbing, you didn't buy the ridiculous crystal chandelier in the foyer, and you certainly don't pay the property taxes.
Thankfully.
Yeah. But you hold the keys. And because you hold those keys, it is your specific job to keep the lights on, to make sure the doors are open, and to make the place welcoming and safe for anyone who needs shelter.
That is a perfect visualization. You are managing a massive resource that you did absolutely nothing to earn.
Right.
And Pastor Tim Travis applies the stewardship directly to the local church and to the individual listener's life. He describes the local church as a red pin drop on a map.
Under God's GPS.
Exactly. You didn't just stumble into your specific life, your neighborhood, your job, or your local assembly by random accident.
It's intentional.
You are a specifically placed unit. You are positioned right where you are meant to be, even if it feels incredibly obscure, to manage and distribute God's grace to the specific people around you.
But wait, what does that actually look like on, say, a random Tuesday morning?
What do you mean?
Well, if we are managing this mansion of grace, how do we practice it when life gets incredibly difficult?
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to talk about grace in a deep dive like this.
Sure, in theory.
But it's entirely different when someone deeply hurts you or when you are carrying the weight of past trauma. How does grace operate in the dirt?
This is where the teaching turns to Titus chapter 2. Pastor Tim Travis points out that grace isn't just a free ticket to heaven or some passive concept. It is an active teacher.
An active teacher.
Yeah. The text says grace teaches us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly.
Okay.
And by living soberly, the sermon emphasizes having a sound, clean mind. There is a great phrase he uses here. When the heart is clean, the vision is clear.
Oh, which circles right back to the blindfold analogy from earlier.
Exactly.
Because if your heart is cluttered with anger, or you are obsessed with settling scores and climbing that ladder, you literally cannot see straight.
You're walking in circles again.
Yeah.
And Pastor Tim Travis is deeply realistic about the pain that causes that clutter.
He addresses it directly.
Yes. He talks about the biblical concept of the root of bitterness. Deep wounds, things like childhood trauma, severe abuse, or betrayal, they plant deep, bitter roots inside of us.
Yeah, they do.
Now, grace doesn't always mean that God magically reaches into your brain and deletes the memory of the trauma so you never feel the pain again.
No, the memory is still there.
The memory remains. The scars remain.
Then how does grace actually stop a childhood trauma from making me bitter today?
Where?
What is the actual mechanism there?
The mechanism is a shift in focus caused by unmerited favor.
A shift in focus.
Right. Bitterness grows when we obsess over what we are owed, the apologies we never got, the fairness we were denied.
Oh, wow.
But grace forces us to look at what we have been given despite what we deserve. When you truly realize that you have been forgiven an infinite, unpayable debt by God, it neutralizes the toxic power of the debts others owe you.
That is so powerful.
God gives more grace specifically for our deepest weaknesses and our deepest hurts. It provides the daily resource that keeps that bitter root from springing up and defiling how you treat people today.
That is a massive paradigm shift.
It really is.
It's not about erasing the dark parts of your past. It's about neutralizing their toxic power in the present and honestly even repurposing them.
And to really drive home the ultimate power of this kind of grace, Pastor Tim Travis shares the historical example of John Newton.
Oh, I've heard parts of this story. It's intense.
It is arguably one of the most visceral, striking examples of grace in human history. John Newton had an absolutely horrific past.
He was a slave trader, right?
Yes. He was engaged in the absolute darkest, most brutal business of human trafficking.
Unbelievable.
The sermon details the sheer wretchedness of his life, how Newton would have enslaved human beings chained and tied together in the hold of a ship.
It's terrific.
And it gets worse. During severe storms, when the ship was too heavy, they would sometimes throw these chained people overboard like an anchor.
That is just, you can't get a darker backdrop than that.
You really can't.
The sheer visceral horror of what he was doing on those ships is almost impossible to comprehend. But then comes the storm.
Right. Newton's own ship hits a massive violent storm in the middle of the ocean. The ship is battered, taking on water, and they are sinking.
This is the end for him.
He thinks it is. In the middle of that terrifying night, facing imminent death, this vile, brutal man drops to his knees and cries out to a God he doesn't even know, begging for mercy.
And he was saved.
He was, not just physically from the storm, but internally. He was radically transformed. The mechanism of grace got a hold of him. And that former slave trader eventually sat down and penned the words to the most famous, beautiful hymn in the world.
Amazing grace.
Yes.
Amazing grace. How sweet the sound. That saved a wretch like me.
The contrast is unbelievable.
It really is. When you hold those two images together, the absolute horror of throwing humans overboard and the pure transcendent beauty of that hymn, it creates this incredible paradox.
It does.
The most beautiful, enduring expressions of grace almost always come from the darkest, most broken pasts. I mean, John Newton writes Amazing Grace after a life of brutality.
Right.
The Apostle Paul writes the majority of the New Testament epistles from the cold floor of a Roman prison after a past of murdering early Christians. It is as if grace actually requires a dark, murky backdrop to really show its brilliance.
And that is the exact revelation Paul had when he said, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am."
Oh, it all comes back to that.
It does. He isn't ignoring his dark past, and he isn't ignoring his current chains either. He is viewing all of it through the lens of a grace that repurposed his entire existence.
So good.
So just to kind of summarize our journey through this teaching today, grace is the unmerited favor that takes off our spiritual blindfolds.
Right.
It frees us from the exhausting, dangerous pursuit of worldly prominence that leaves so many powerful people feeling entirely empty.
For Robin Williams and Rehoboam examples.
Exactly. It positions us through God's GPS in exact, sometimes obscure locations for a highly specific purpose. And finally, it tasks us with being active stewards of that grace.
Using it to keep our own roots of bitterness from springing up.
Yeah, so we can share that unmerited favor with the world around us.
It just completely flips the script on how we view the trajectory of our lives.
It really does.
Which leaves us with something really important to think about as we wrap up here.
What's that?
Well, if a steward's job is to manage someone else's property, I want you to take a look at your own life right now.
Good challenge.
Yeah, look at your obscure talents, your specific neighborhood, your daily commute, and maybe even your deepest past hurts and regrets. What if those aren't just random, unfortunate facts about you? What if all of that is the actual property God has handed you to steward, manage, and use to share grace with someone else this week?